You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to the Battle Bridge TNG podcast, where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Liaisons. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
Oh my goodness, James from London, my gosh. I'm trying to remember, when did we last speak? I'm going to find the file that it created for us. And we're going to see when it was.
So I'm going to put my neck on the line here and suggest that 2020 has not quite been the vintage year that many would have been hoping for on the 1st of January.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness. It is insane here. Okay, so June 26th.
Wow, that's not too bad.
Yeah, that's terrible.
I was expecting, like, April.
Okay, so it's only 4 months instead of six, but... Oh, first of all, it's great to talk to you again. I have missed you terribly in 4 months, and,
Are you talking to me, or are you talking to the listeners?
All of you. Everybody involved. All 14 people that are listening, and you. Liaisons. Let me go back to it. So, synopsis for this episode is, as alien dignitaries visit the sheep, Picard's shuttle crashes on a desolate planet where he meets a woman who has been stranded there for 7 years. This is the second episode of Season 7, first premiered on September 27th, 1993. Teleplay by Jeannie Kerrigan-Fossey and Lisa Rich. Story by Roger Eschbacher. I don't know. I suck at names. And Jock Greenspan. Directed by Cliff Bolian. Cliff Bolian? Oh, see, you know, I think it was one of our cousin, the Delta Quadrant, that screwed me up with Bolian, the Bolian Bowl or something. Guest stars for tonight's episode are Ricky Deshaun Collins as Boy. That's amazing. As Boy.
He's Eric.
It's Eric. Yes. Eric was his name. You know, one of the dignitaries kept fondling him all over. Barbara Williams as Anna. Eric Pierpoint as Volval. Paul Eating as Loquel. And Michael Harris as Byleth. Fascinating pilot. And as I look, I do not see any computer action today, so magic will not be discussed. So what do we think of this episode? Where to begin? You know, I think the networks took this episode, aired it, and watched it as it was playing. And it could be another example of why TNG just didn't go past Season 7. Okay? There were times it made me want to jump off the cliff myself. And there were times that it was absolute comedic genius at work. And I got a feeling these story people, the story who created, it's two, teleplay by two and story by two different people. So my guess is one group handled the ship, the other group might have handled the planet. Anyway, unfortunately, the sucky parts kind of drug a little bit, and it kind of overpowered the fun parts, in a sense. Because as I was doing the notes, I go back down to the planet, and I'm like, oh, I could feel my ADD kicking in, where I was starting to drift off and look over, you know, and I was expecting to see, oh, bunny rabbit, but didn't happen. How about you, Doc?
Okay. This episode's really perplexing. Mm-hmm. And the reason why it's perplexing is that it feels like a lot of other episodes somehow. I kind of like feel that I've seen this before. And I don't know if I've seen this before on Voyager, which obviously is a bit of an oxymoron, because that's still yet to come. Or it kind of has a lot of... It kind of reminds me of a lot of episodes that we've seen, whether it, you know, a lot of the diplomatic missions, right? Whenever they're dealing with the ambassadors, it's just really perplexing. It also feels like, and it's a really, you know, I'm not going to be particularly insightful or anything on this, but it feels like an earlier season episode.
Can I interrupt you?
Go ahead.
If I don't get this out, I'll probably forget. What this reminded me of was Dr. McCoy in the library episode, where he accidentally, you know, went through and ended up in some frozen area, wasteland or whatever, where this woman was living in a cave and even had heat and put a blanket on him and that kind of thing. They fell in love with each other type of thing. Does that sound familiar?
I wasn't thinking of that one.
Okay.
And as you were talking about it, I was thinking, you talk about Spock's brain there.
No.
I think it's another one. It feels like a season two episode. It's just really baffling. I don't get this. Okay. As a concept, we've gotten 7 years through, and then basically they've come up with something saying, hey, you know, wouldn't it be weird if there are aliens that didn't know what love or, you know, what was it? Love. What was the thing they were trying to
experience?
Antagonism. Love, antagonism and
I think, and indulging. What's... Maybe indulging, something like that.
Well, you know, whatever it was, it just, to me, it felt like, Is that what you've got? Is that what we're running with? I mean, we're 7 years into the show, or this is the beginning of the seventh season. You know, we've been asking profound questions and tightly wrapped in the scripts, in particular, like since, you know, season three, and we're coming up with this. It's awful, isn't it?
It's totally
awful. And, oh, yeah, there's a nice bit in 10-4 where Data speaks to Worf and he goes... Oh, you know, you guys are very similar because you're both, you know, annoying and hard to get along with. Ha ha ha. Yeah, great. That's fine. But that's not enough to keep the episode going, right? And having Worf in his uniform, his dress uniform, is not enough to keep the episode going. And I really wish they stopped over-egging the pudding with, you know, Troy being some type of emotional eater that sits there in some kind of, you know, gluttony-fueled coma on the back of binging at the buffet bar. You know, again, if this was like season two, you can kind of see where they're coming from, because it's a very clumsily written script at the same time as the questions not being particularly great that they're asking. So, oh yeah, this is not I don't understand how this is, you know, how they got to this point. You know, maybe they just didn't have any writers at this point, that they've got the second season of DS9 going on. They're writing and they're doing pre-production on Voyager. They are probably looking at stuff regarding Generations at this point. You know, at least pre-production, at least they've got an idea, I would imagine. So yeah, maybe everyone's just too busy and you drop a few eggs, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the issue.
That could be. I mean, I have to say, you know, you're right. It just doesn't come together all that well. But it sure looks like MacIldorn went for it and tried his best to keep this one from burning down. I mean, the dress thing, you know, he says, this looks like dresses. These look like dresses. And I'm thinking, yeah, wasn't that something I was talking about in season one, men in dresses? But they were actually men in dresses. This is just an oversized shirt with their pants on. Now, that the guy I was talking about walked past engineering or was evacuating. You see the guy's legs. That was literally a dress. What the heck was that all about? Maybe that's his nightie. And he was sleeping at the time that happened. They had to evacuate. But yeah, you're right. So, okay, so we talked about the dresses. Worf is putting on his formal evening gown for delegates who are coming aboard. He comments on how they look like dresses. Yes, I know. We've talked about that at Encounter at Farce Point. Riker calls it outdated and a sexist attitude. And I said, geez, I'm sorry. I just kind of observed that when we first started watching these series. And besides, he says, you look good in a dress. I groaned. I gotta admit, did you groan as you went, oh, geez.
Actually, I think I might have slightly chuckled, but it's been a hard year.
It has been, yeah. Right now, anything can make us laugh. But, yeah, Worf, on the other hand, Worf in his face. He's kind of like, did you ever watch Steve Harvey?
No, I'm not aware of the name.
Oh, wow. Okay, I want you to go to YouTube. Write this down if you have to. Go to YouTube and look up Family Feud Steve Harvey.
Mm-hmm.
He is a comedian, and he's absolutely drop-dead hilarious. Some of the answers, like the question, 100 people were asked, name a word.
Oh, okay, so you're talking about the, you know, the black guy with the moustache.
Yes.
The presenter. Yeah, yeah. Right. I've actually seen him before in other competitions, and he does do a bit of a, he does have reaction shots, right?
Oh, God. Yeah. Name a word that follows with, follows pork. You know, like pork roast, pork loin, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And this one guy comes up and says, coupon, Steve. And there we go. Steve Harvey's reactions and his face, his contortions and his jokes. He stops. He said production stopped at that point. It went 15 minutes of pure laughter that you don't see in the show because this guy said coupon, as in porcupine. So, needless to say, it wasn't up there. But yeah, Steve Harvey is hilarious. And all right, so that's what Worf kind of reminded me of with his reactions. You know, like, for instance, what did he say? He was demanding, temperamental, and rude. And Data yes. says, yeah, well, that's qualities that you share in abundance. So that was good. Okay, three guys from the Lumpyhead species were called Eerians because I think they called them Eerians, but there was an L in their name. So was it Lyrians or Eerians? Did you?
No, there's no L. There's no L.
I thought there was.
No, it's capital I.
Oh, that's why. What am I thinking? I've lost my track of the English language or the alphabets there. That was a bad year.
So I don't understand these guys. I guess these guys have a spaceship, although it looks suspiciously like a shuttle that mm-hmm. they've refit. And I'm still going to bring it up, right? I don't think that shuttle is going fast enough to where it needs to be and has enough facilities on the toilet side for a comfortable ride. So I don't understand that, you know, this illogical nonsense about shuttle. The only reason why you get into a shuttle is to be stranded on the planet. There's no other reason to be in a shuttle. This species, right? They've never come across anyone ever that has a concept of love or pleasure or, you know, or whatever Worf's one was, an antagony. You know, this is despite the fact that every single alien species we've seen in TNG so far has displayed all of these human-like emotions. Wow. These guys, they don't. You know, it's not just they don't get it, but they've never come across anyone else that gets it. And we're supposed to believe this is something uniquely human, which is clearly not true. It's not uniquely human, right? The Romulans are the same, and the Klingons are the same. You want to talk about antagonists? Go and talk to an Andorian or a Tellarite. You know.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah. Yeah. As soon as you see their shuttle, you know this isn't going to go well. Especially when he said it was going to take 17 hours to arrive. And you know what I thought when Picard was on this shuttle? And he's trying to make small talk with this guy who wants nothing to do with him. How much longer?
He doesn't want anything to do with him yet. Soon, he'll be trying to get him in bed.
Of course. But you know why I thought... Can you pick up on what I'm saying? Why it felt fitting that Picard was in a situation... He was like, what am I going to do for 17 hours here? What does that remind you of?
It reminds me of when he was in... The last time he was in a shuttle with Wesley.
Yes!
But...
Yes!
Was that the last one, or was it one before that as well? But
It was the one before that. No, the last one went good. That's when they... You know, that was a final mission. But the one before that, where he had to get his heart worked on. You know, he's like... He tries to talk to Picard. Picard's giving him short answers. I guess you would have rather had Commander Riker here. What? Oh, I'm sorry I'm being such a prick. Let me, here, come back. Let's have some sandwiches and talk. I mean, that's what Picard is going through right now, what Wesley went through. I thought that was amazing there. Get it. But there's obviously not at warp speed. And why didn't Picard say, hey, you know, that's how you... I like the build of this shuttle. This really, really looks good. But take a look at that one over there. It's got warp drive. Do you want to get there in a few minutes or 17 hours? What's best?
Actually, so we've already established the runabouts exist, right?
Yes, yes.
So Timescape had the runabouts. So get into a sodden runabout and get there in literally seconds, right? If it's warp speed versus non-warp speed, it's hundreds of thousands of orders of magnitude. So what are we doing? Again, there's only one reason why you're put into a shuttle, and that's to keep you out of the way whilst something either happens to the ship or you crash onto a planet.
That's it.
There have been no other instances of a shuttle being used.
Oh, no. No. If anything, Riker should have... Whatever mission the Enterprise was on, Riker could have said, you know, that pretty officer up there on Khan, yeah, I'm talking about you. You can see right, girl. She could press a button and we can be there in 4 minutes, and then we'll just go on to what we were going to do without you, because apparently we are so busy here on this ship that we don't have time to take you anywhere. That's what you get. But yeah, you're right.
But also, what did the Enterprise do?
Right? Nothing.
They just hung around in space, right?
Yes, they were circling around the area. Waiting for Picard to come back.
Sometimes they have this pretense that, oh, we've had to warp away to sort out some, you know, some space sheep that need to be taken care of or whatever it is.
Yeah, we are packlets. We are far from home. You know. Yeah, okay. The Enterprise was absolutely needed as... Picard was dying on an operating table, and the absolute only doctor in the entire galaxy had to deal with these backlids. She was the only one that could possibly save him. Yes, you get the same cliche. You walk into somebody else's shuttle. Or how about Captain, Durgan or something? I can't remember his name. And he goes, it's a sturdy craft. Yeah, sure it is. Yes. Until they crashed on a desert planet that had water that you couldn't get to. Yeah, it's the same cliche over and over. Okay. So, of course, the shuttle has an emergency power loss, and they got to make an emergency landing, and they crash land. in one piece. How does that happen? It's like being in an airplane that's not in space. It's actually in the sky, and if it makes an emergency landing, sometimes they just blow up to pieces and fall apart. But yet these shuttles come from space at 1,000 miles an hour and slam into the Earth, and they're all, not even the windows cracked. But they survived. Sort of. He goes out of the shuttle. What was the deal with all the lightning strikes? Were those plasma?
Plasma? Well, hang on. So lightning is plasma, right?
is it?
Or at least... As you send the electric current through any kind of gas, it will ionize the gas, which is what plasma is. But by the way, you know, when people say plasma, I mean plasma. You can't have cold plasma. Plasma has to be extremely hot, extremely energetic, in order to rip the electrons out of the molecules that are sitting there. Mm. But This part of the story is, I don't know which one's more objectionable, by the way. The stuff that happens on the ship, or the stuff that happens on the planet. I haven't quite figured that out yet. But, you know, very quickly, you know, he goes out, he gets hit by lightning, he falls over, and then someone comes and drags him in somewhere. And you kind of know it's not the woman, right? Or at least I thought it was pretty clear that it's not the woman that was that picked him up. I don't know. I think this is all very, very clunky. And surely, you know, if this was your plan, if your plan was that you need to go and experience love, surely there are easier ways than this.
Hmm.
Surely.
Right. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, because all you see is a shadow of a person. You see their hands, but you see the shadow just pick him up and take him on. So obviously this person had this all prearranged to have a cargo ship just sitting there. Or do you think they live there? I mean, how did that come about?
Oh, no, this cargo ship was sitting there, right? Mm-hmm. This is where they found the diary of... this is where they found the diary, right? And they tried to replicate what was going on. Now... Okay, am I the only person with a sick mind that actually starts thinking, what else was there in the diary later on, once they had quote-unquote fallen in love? I don't know if there's anything explicitly mentioned of what, you know, what was in store for Picard. Ooh, I shudder to think.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, honestly, I hadn't seen this in such a long time that I remember the three ambassadors. One loved their chocolate and all the desserts, and the other one was intentionally pissing off Worf. I do remember that, and I remember Picard and a woman that saved him. I totally forgot the end result, that the woman was obviously actually a man. I totally missed that one completely until I saw it and said, holy crap, that's right, I forgot about this. Because then I started to wonder, you know how I am sometimes, I think, is this what you would consider, because of the fact that she kept throwing herself on him and kissing him, and could this be the, you know, the same-sex kiss that actually occurred because she looked like a woman, or he looked like a woman at the time, or is that how they got out of it? Because what does it remind me of? And you know where I'm heading with this. In what way does this kind of... Oh, let's see here. And I have it in my notes. I'm going a little ahead. But it reminds me of two things. When Beverly falls in love with a Trill named Odon. And, you know, they have a wonderful romance till he gets injured. And then the symbiont has to be put into Riker. And they just pick up where they left off with that romance. Because, let's face it, Riker's pretty handsome. until it starts to kill him, and they need to get it in another trill very, very fast. So they send one, and it turns out to be a woman. And all of a sudden, this romance that spanned two different people, we're just not used to these changes. You know, I think it would have been better to say, I'm not a lesbian, I'm sorry. This can't work. I do care about you. I may even love you, but I can't be a lesbian. It doesn't work for me. Or how about Riker, when he falls in love with a no gender species? Just so happens, once in a while, these genderless species just, they believe they're one sex or another. Some become men, some feel they're women, and the one he's with just so happens to have womanly urges. And I remember back then, Jonathan Frakes said it probably would have been bolder had this person that he fell in love with more identify as a man. That would have probably been a risque episode, but of course that's not something they would do. So, you know, we had to wait till Deep Space Nine to get our girl-on-girl kiss. And that was only, over, oh yeah, and I remember hearing that everybody in the production crew showed up that day to be on set for that. And it probably went something like this. Ready? Action! Boom! They start kissing. Ah, cut. Let's try that again. Yeah, good job, boss. Ready? Action! Boom! They kiss again. What do you think? About 7-8 more takes? Will that titillize everybody here? Titillate everybody here. But anyway, so that was only overdone by Star Trek Enterprise. I think we even talked about that one time. The girl on man on dog scene.
You know, hang on. I'm just sitting here thinking, when was a girl on girl kiss in Enterprise? Because I don't remember that.
No, that's what I'm saying.
It was the oil down.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Deep Space Nine girl-on-girl kiss was only overdone by the decon rubbing of Vaseline jelly, the girl-on-girl on man-on-dog. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, good Porto's got some action in on that one. So, anyway, yeah. I still believe Star Trek chickened out here in this episode as well. Because why couldn't he just be himself?
But the thing is, that's not the story here, right?
No, it's not.
They need a different person on the planet in order to fall in love with Picard, because yeah, they're trying to replicate, you know, what they've read in that book. So, you know, they can't have a pilot that's female and then they can, like, you know, then you know, shack up together, and they can't have a pilot that's male that they then shack up together. And I would imagine that, yeah, I imagine they would not want to go ahead with the idea that Picard and a bloke get stranded on a planet for a couple of years and then start developing a deep, you know, a deep homosexual relationship. I imagine that that's not what they're going for in this script.
No. But what's weird is that, you know, when it's revealed that she's actually him, and he doesn't go, you kissed me, you know, that type of thing. But he doesn't. I mean,
no. By the way, am I the only person thinking that Picard's a bit slow in this episode? So he like mentions, well, how are you here? Isn't it convenient that you're only here after this other guy disappeared, and now he's disappeared again and you're here? It's almost as if, oh, hang on, it's almost as if he brought you the necklace. It's mm-hmm. like, no, Picard, no, we're way ahead of you. No one's thinking about that. He brought her the necklace.
Yeah, it did take a little bit on the uptake for him to get it. Okay, so back on the ship, the first delegate's walking around with Deanna and popping like little chocolates in his mouth. And then all of a sudden he sees something so interesting that he disappears. And she's like, Ambassador, hello? Hello? And she finds he's down the hall spinning this little boy around, grabbing him here on his shoulders, checking out his chest, checking out his back. Like, what the heck is this? You mean a child? Yeah, a child.
So this is possibly the stupidest scene in this episode.
Oh my god.
I mean, it's just like, look, if they wanted to go for this, they should have shown like a baby, right? and done the thing about, blimey, your children are really small, maybe. Because I don't believe for a second that this species are born, right, fully grown, while still having nipples. It just makes no sense. Now, I can imagine you might want to stretch it and say, look, that they're young, come out, you know, more developed, and they're not like babies. And there is something to be said about, hey, you know, human babies in particular, they are the most vulnerable, or almost one of the most vulnerable of all of the mammals that get born, right? We jettison them at a very, very, very early stage when they can't fend for themselves, unlike many other animals. And you could say that, but, you know, finding a 9-year-old boy and going, what the heck is that? And then say, would you like some dessert? And his mum's saying, yeah, feed sure. him some dessert. Oh,
yeah.
What?
Yeah. Go ahead. I mean, she's standing there as he's manhandling this little boy, and the look on his face, he looks at his mom like, aren't you going to do something here? I'm not exactly very comfortable with this. Because I even had a screenshot that he is looking at this boy. Okay, he's got his hands around this little boy's arms. As the little boy's looking at his mom, he's looking down on him. And I'm thinking, okay, of course, they're not going there. Okay, what is this guy, a possible pedophile? They're not going there. But still, the look itself, it was pretty, pretty damning to me. And then he just flips him around and checks out, you know, the back of him, and he turns him around again, and this little boy is being manhandled as his mother's going, oh, ain't that cute? This alien doesn't know what a little kid is. Yeah, go ahead. You know, and I was even thinking, you know, he wants to take him for dessert. Is that okay? And Troy looks at the mom saying, what do you think?
and the thing is, because they haven't paid for the actors to talk more than one line, she kind of smiles and nods. It's like, what the hell are you doing? That's the creepiest thing in the world. This woman needs to understand about stranger danger. You know, some guy comes along and says, ooh, let me take this. It's so wrong. By the way, I should mention that I'm just looking here at Memory Alpha, and this boy is in 3 episodes this season.
Really?
Yeah. He's in Masks and Firstborn.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, well, we look forward to seeing him and see if anyone else comes on board the Enterprise and tries to feed him pudding. Yeah, that actually sounds like a pretty, pretty dodgy euphemism.
Yeah, but then they're asking, would you like to go get some dessert? And the mother, you know, like you say, she just says, yeah, sure, okay. And she walks off with him. I was expecting Deanna to say, we'll have him home by 8. But she walks off with him, thank God. You know, because obviously Deanna's not saying, Ambassador, would you kindly let the boy go? That's not right in our society. So anyway, here we go past that.
And isn't she supposed to be on duty or something?
Nobody's got any problems going on right now, so I guess. Yeah, maybe not. Anyway, okay. So Picard wakes up and discovers that he's with a woman named Anna, who's taking care of him. Not bad looking, I'd say. Not the hottest, but what are you going to do for a man posing as a woman? At first, she's not very talkative, and she tells Picard she crash-landed here. Oh, my goodness. It's always dark here, so I don't see the sun. I don't know how long. Yeah, it's been 7 years. 7 years? Oh my god, that's terrible. Okay, good. We're past that. So, Worf.
I don't understand. What's the point here? What are they trying to go for? So, they're setting this up. They clearly must be setting this up as some type of. They must believe they have an interesting mystery here. And they're playing it straight, right? And I just. I don't get it. I just think it's You know, do you really have any interest in who this woman is and how she got here? I mean, what are the... And also, by the way, this also harks back to the menagerie, right? And the cage on the original pilot. The idea of, hey, yeah, you can... You know, why don't we bring you down onto a ship and you can have some nice time with this woman? You know, surely that should be needed reading for any captain. So Picard should be... He should be aware of these situations. Doesn't want to shack up with someone in a cage.
Yeah, yeah. This sure sounds familiar. Huh. Well, then again, yeah. No, it was in canon. I was going to say, I thought maybe the menagerie is... Obviously, the menagerie is not in canon, but...
Maybe it's not in canon.
Because it was never put out.
No, the cage was never put out, but the menagerie was.
Oh, okay. It's the other way around. Okay, you're right. Thank you.
But I still consider the cage canon.
Oh, I do too, obviously. Yeah. Because the fact it's in the menagerie. They found it a way. The network didn't like it, but they found a way to sneak it in. That was ingenious. So back on the ship, Worf is describing to Riker and Troy how he wants to kill him. But what does Riker come up with?
So here's the thing. Don't you think, okay, so Worf reports to Riker, yeah? And then also, Troy, you know, is the counselor. If Worf says, I want to physically kill this person, do you not think that these guys should be a little bit more concerned rather than just laughing it off? I mean, it's not as if Worf can't kill him.
Yeah. He could very easily do it. And let's face it, how patient are Klingons?
Yeah, not very.
I mean, he might have an insanity defense. If anything, mm-hmm. Because this guy's driving him nuts. So, anyway, all right, let's go back. But what does Worf come up with as a suggestion? Well, hey, why don't we all get together? We'll have a nice little game of poker. How long did it take to explain to these aliens who know nothing about love, nothing about antagonizing, nothing about indulgences, but somehow they know poker?
Yep, that's right.
Okay.
I didn't think of that.
I'll accept it. I'll take it, because, you know, Riker's probably an old hand at explaining. You want this, you want a like two pair, you want the this here all the way up to your full house, or straight flush and royal flush, and this is the higher you get. Okay, we're good. But then we have the poker game. They're calling, they're playing, and all of a sudden, you see him steal some chips from Worf. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was going
to
happen.
Worf did have his chips particularly close to the other guy, though, right?
Exactly.
It's not as if, you know, that they were about an inch away from each other. If yes. He had a problem with it, he could have moved them.
Mm-hmm. He shouldn't have had them there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like, you know, what I wrote was, excuse me, Ambassador, I realize I put my chips in front of you. But they are my chips. Okay, no, you're lying. So he said two. I thought I saw three chips being stolen, but I could be wrong. So what happens? As Riker sits there and watches, Worf
He just sits there, and he sits there for far too long.
Yes, he's beating the crap out of him, turning him upside down and dropping him on the ground. You know, and Riker's going, what am I seeing this? But he eventually stops him. He grabs Worf. And I was expecting Worf lost it, right? I was expecting Worf to throw Riker's arms out of him. But it was a good thing he didn't. That's probably insubordination. How ironic.
See, that's proper insubordination.
Yes. That would be proper. All right, so. And of course, that turns the ambassador on. He's like, yes, very good. Oh, very, very good. What? Thank you, Mr. Worf. I now understand you. You want to understand some more? No, I'm good. That kind of hurt. All right, we have to go back down onto the planet where Picard is realizing that the woman is actually kept holding him hostage because every time she leaves, she locks the door. Did you notice the last time she left locking the door, all it was a little bar that spun? And you could see the bar spin?
I mean, you could. It's not necessarily clear that that was the... you know, there might have been a proper locking mechanism. We don't know. But when he mentioned that, why are you keeping it locked from the outside? It made me think that it was a little bit more than just an actual bar that turns, that it looked at least like Picard had complete access to, right?
Well, he did have that little device on him that he ripped that off at that point. And he's like, punching himself in the gut. I feel fine. I feel good. Why don't I hurt? But still, I'm thinking, I'm watching that bar do a 1/4 turn, and he didn't touch it. He's pounding, gets a crowbar.
Right.
Gets a crowbar. He finds a crowbar. Tries to go the door, but he did not want to. Did he touch the handle that he just saw spin a 1/4 turn and lock? I would have at least tried. I don't know. I'm weird that way.
No, Picard's a bit dim in this one. I mean, he is dim, right? He's slow at recognizing that there's something. You know, this isn't the first time he's been abducted and he's ended up somewhere. He would have been ended up in, in that prison where there was another person in the prison that was working for the other side. He's experienced at being in these kind of situations, and he just comes across as really quite naive.
Yeah, there you go. And so who shows up? The guy who she said was dead. Turns out he's very much alive. And he's going to help her look for the lady.
So this is a stupid thing, right? Because the woman volunteers, right, that she's been here for 6 years, and which makes the situation a bit more incredible. She volunteers that the guy's died, which means when he has to turn up, they have to explain that away. She also volunteers that he's got broken ribs, which he doesn't. She volunteers that there are dangerous animals, which there aren't. She volunteers all of this information as a way of, as far as I can tell, just making it clearer and clearer and clearer to at least the viewer and Picard on a good day that she's just feeding him, you know, lies, right? It's very clear very early on that this isn't all what it seems.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think he actually gets it till he's all the way on the edge of the cliff himself. And she did say, you know, all this time, I've seen this big 200-meter cliff that I could have jumped off, and I thought about doing it a couple times, and it would have been over. I mean, did he not ask, so this is a pretty weird environment. What have you been eating for all this time? Do you have any water?
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm.
Does this derelict cargo ship seem to have a replicator? Where did he get it power from?
Who's doing your makeup?
Yes.
there's a lot of stuff to ask.
Well, she was having a bad hair day, too. But, yeah, exactly. You don't smell so bad. Where did you get in the water? Do you have a sonic shower in here? But, yeah, he is so slow on the uptake all the way to the cliff. He gets it when he sees that necklace.
But even then, he does mention, like, did the other guy give it to you? He's like, come off it. I mean, is that... That could not have been said with sincerity, right? He can't possibly think that the other guy is working with her and he ran back and got the necklace and brought it back to her. I mean, it just seems odd. And I almost expect Picard, once the girl turns into the guy, I almost expect Picard to turn to the camera and go, well, I didn't see that one coming, because he's just so dumb this episode.
Oh, man. Oh, how did I fall for this? Oh, yeah, no. So, yeah, and he dare. She says, "I'm gonna jump. I'm gonna do it." Go ahead.
That's nice.
Yeah. Go ahead, then I'll figure out a way out of here myself. And what does she do? She then turns into the man. And like I said, he didn't go, "Oh, you kissed me." You know, maybe do a half bomb. Okay. So, the shuttle crashed. Things are burned out. He's got a power cell that's on the verge of collapsing itself. How did they get off that planet?
Well, it was all for show, right? It was all for show.
Also, everything worked just fine?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. So, well, then it's a good
No,
thing when it.
it's still stupid.
Yeah, well, yeah. But I mean, it's a good thing when it crash landed, it didn't fall apart.
Yes.
Okay. So, okay, it's now time to see the ambassadors off. And, you know, we find out that Worf actually engaged the antagonizer with 11 hours of holodeck battle simulations, and he's pretty damned beat. I mean, he's sore. And so what does Riker do? He pats him on the back. And oh man, Worf's face when he did that was that was funny. That I still think, as bad as this episode is, and it's bad, the indulgent ambassador who's taking Deanna on a trip through chocolate, he's kind of lame. The one that Worf got, oh, the pair makes the entire episode. If it's anything, it's them two.
So, hang on, Lou. I'm getting really kind of painful flashbacks here. What is the Star Trek episode where they have a group of ambassadors that come onto the ship and they get taken care of and they're not expected to indulge? And at the end, there's a little bit of a twist whereby I think that, you know, the main priest or the main ambassador says, "Oh, you should have let your guard down a little bit," because they end up like with drunk ambassadors. I think it's on a Voyager episode, right? Do you have any recollection of that? Or I seem to remember that like Paris got given an ambassador and a couple of people got given an ambassador and they basically went off on a massive like 4-day bender.
Oh yeah, something like, yes, I remember something like
I
that.
mean, because to me this that's really what the Troy ambassador was doing, right? She it was like, "Hey, look here, look after this guy and feed him chocolate." And okay, great. What a wonderful episode that is.
Yeah, right. Okay, so. All right, so they are off, and Picard will never talk about this situation to anybody. I guess that's the episode in a nutshell. How did we? Oh, yeah, it was my 45-minute story that dragged us this to an hour and a half. Probably it. So I guess that's pretty much it for this one. What do you think? Did I miss a lot?
Okay, I'm really, really worried because my Googling has suggested that the episode I'm remembering is Someone to Watch Over Me in Voyager. Because Neelix ends up with a very, very drunk ambassador, and it's the beeline to Someone to Watch Over Me, which is a wonderful episode. So,
Oh, yeah.
oh, I hope they haven't spoiled it. Okay, anyway, I think surely we are done with this.
Okay. You know, maybe someday before we're old, retired, and maybe dead, we could talk about Someone to Watch Over Me. Oh,
Maybe.
that's where Seven was trying to oh, what do I want to say? Was she like romantically interested in the doctor or something? And if she has too many sweet memory or sweet times like that, her implant was going to self-destruct or something?
No, hang on, I don't remember that. I thought this was just about her becoming more personable with the crew, and the doctor is brought in as a as as a guide to romantic, dates and stuff.
There you go. Okay, you're right. And those ambassadors that you were talking about, they're supposed to be like monks where they aren't supposed to be doing certain things, and one of them's enjoying the Katerian pudding.
That's right.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Now I'm looking at that and I understand what you're saying.
That's more... I got flashbacks to that episode. Yeah. Anywho, final thoughts and ratings?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So it's now time for final thoughts and ratings on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. You want to go first?
Yeah. Okay. Go for it. I'm going 1. 1. No redeeming features on this episode. There's no need for this to be this bad at this time of the TNT run, right? I don't know how they had such a bad idea at this stage. Now, you could argue that, you know, they're running out of ideas, and maybe, but you could still do crazy stuff. And season 7 has a lot of crazy stuff in it, and I will be forgiven episodes that are notoriously bad, like Masks and Genesis and stuff like that coming up, because they're like a fun romp. It's like, oh, well, clearly this is nonsense, but isn't it interesting that they did it this way? And in particular Genesis, right? It's very unique. It's very differently shot. It's pure nonsense dialed up to 11, but that's all it is. This, on the other hand, is just nonsense that's boring, and it I think it believes it's more... It doesn't recognize that it's a whole lot of nonsense. It almost feels like the episode wants to believe that it's substantial. And what can we say about this? This is the episode where a couple of ambassadors come on board. They ask stupid questions and the Enterprise sits there. You know, we don't even have a B storyline to get on with things like Picard, like Riker brushing his hair or Crusher, talking to her dead husband, whatever you want to pluck out of thin air. There's nothing going on here. One out of five.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. I would have liked to even been at the dinner table in Eric's quarters when he says, "Mom, why did you let him grab me that much? You know, let's have a discussion. Don't you know?"
I thought you were going to say, "Why did him grab me that way?"
Yeah. Well, yeah. No. Yeah. Well, like I said, I've already hit a screenshot. You know, when you put the, I don't remember what it's called, the picture for each episode. When you're going to see the screenshot for that, you're going to understand why I find that so freaky. Because literally, the kid is so small. He's on his knees. His eyes are at this little boy's chest level, and he's looking down. It's not anything. There's nothing that they actually thought of. Hey, you know, what could be if this guy might have pedophilia ambition or thoughts of, and he's looking at this boy, and Deanna says, "Ambassador, that's not proper for you to be grabbing him like that or holding him like that." No, she's like, "Oh, it's a child. You don't have to. Oh, how cool. Yeah, let's go get some chocolate." Yeah. I was expecting this ambassador to say, "Let's jump into my windowless van and get some chocolate on going here." But anyway, that's not my final thought there. Okay. You outdid me. Because I said, how do we end this episode without being so down? Honestly, I think Michael Dorn's acting was the best part about it. And it's the only good part. Only good part about it. I can't even say that anything else was actually meaningful, except for putting Worf on the spot and making him feel annoyed. It couldn't have happened better. Nothing would have ever happened had they given him to Data. The guy would have been, he would have realized what antagonism was really about when he wanted to shoot himself in the head dealing with Data. You had to give him to somebody who had a propensity for violence, and What Klingon besides Alexander doesn't have a propensity for violence? You know, I don't want to be a warrior. So he's going to find out how volatile a Klingon can be when he flips him upside down. But we learn that's why he is there. The other ambassador is sent to study what, you know, the indulgences of human sweets and consuming about 25,000 calories of desserts in a 3-day period. And then we have Riker trying to find out why this woman, who turns out to be the third ambassador, is so fixated on him. I love you. I mean, he just woke up minutes ago and she's, I love you. Well, so we find out.
One problem that I have with Picard is that if Picard is that slow and he honestly thinks that this woman is the woman and mm-hmm. he's worried that the woman's going to jump off it, even as a game...
Hold on, speak up a little bit. You're fading out.
No, so even as a game, why doesn't he just say, yeah, I love you too. Now come off the cliff and we're going home. I mean, to me, it just felt like, anyway, doesn't matter. I really didn't understand what the problem here was with
Here's one way to look at it too. I mean, he was in this cargo ship with her. She was saying, but I love you. And I thought, well, geez, Picard, you haven't been laid since Vosh. Well, why don't you, get it over with? You know, make him feel a little better, because, I don't think Picard goes into some of the holodeck programs like LaForge or Riker do, but anyway.
Okay, hang on. Picard hasn't been laid since Vosh. Mm-hmm. Do we really think that's true?
Yes.
No. So first of all, there was lessons? What was it called? The one when he falls in love with the scientist woman. So he's been banging last season anyway.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
He also had the Q episode with Tapestry, where he effectively went back to his youth and started and had some rumpy pumpy with a friend of his. One is there. What else has there been? There's been, he went home, he went back to the academy, right, for the first duty. I'm sure when he goes back to the academy, it's a free-for-all. So he's getting plenty. I wouldn't worry about Picard.
I guess you're right. Yeah. And then there was a time they turned him into Rugrats, and Keiko was coming on to O'Brien. Okay. That actually might be creepier than this guy throwing Eric around. But, okay, so... All right. Where was I?
So what are you going for? You going for...
I forgot. I lost where I was. So, okay, anyway. I think that's pretty much it. I don't know how to analyze this any further. This, like I said, this was really stupid. I can't give it a one because one is just a drop, is a dead on arrival Star Trek episode. But I think Michael Dorn and his counterpart on this episode at least gives it something to look for, even if you have to fast forward to those parts alone. I wish they would have stayed there more often, because I thought it's the only good part of this episode. So I think Michael Dorn deserves an extra one, to be honest. That his side of this dance probably is why I say it's probably a very, very low two. So that's what I was thinking about. So, there we are. A two and a one. You have not given a one since Achwiel on season 6 and Man of the People on season 6. Those were both ones.
Yeah, I've had a quick look ahead of the season. We have some not great episodes coming up, right?
Sub Rosa.
Well, it's not even Sub Rosa. I was looking at just IMDb ratings because I was thinking, okay, am I really just completely disconnected from the rest of the world? Do I hate this more than others? Mm-hmm. And you know, this episode on IMDb is rated higher than next week's episode on IMDb, which, yeah, well, maybe that's going to be a slog as well.
Interface. Oh, interface. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mom? Mom, is that you? What are you seeing, Jordy? Mom, how long have you been down here? How'd you get here? None of this makes any... Mom, is that you? Yeah, okay, whatever. Yeah, I know. Unfortunately, that's why nobody wanted to be on this one. Nobody wants to be on that one. I've got nobody for Gambit. Nobody for Attached. Nobody for Force of Nature, Firstborn, and Bloodlines. So, we have a few episodes open, guys. By the time you hear this, of course, you know, we'll be ahead of the game here.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I was hoping to get at least one or two more before I start with the Undiscovered Country and then the second part of the cliffhanger so we can have a couple in case we can't record. We got a couple in the can that can fill in the gaps. Because, like I said, I don't know. I may want to put out Descent Part 1 again before I put out Part 2. It was so long ago. You know, do you think that might be a good idea? Just re-release Descent Part 1? And then next week...
It's going to be in the feed, right? It's going to be just behind it in the feed anyway, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just like any old Star Trek episode, there's months that they go between seasons, so that's what we're doing, so to speak. Except for, I still don't remember. We started, what, 2014?
No idea.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. Anyway, that's it. Any final words you want to say before we go?
Join us again next week when we review the episode Interface.
Interface, episode 3.
Episode 3.
All right, hopefully we could snag a guest. So take care and good night, all.
Good night.
Okay.
I'm going to press the button to stop recording.
Oh, yeah.
Click. Yeah. I've got a cat here that's hassling me, but he wants to go outside. But when I open the door to go outside, it's pouring down with rain. So the cat then stands at the door going, well, I don't want to go outside. So I then close the door, and then he'll go off, and they'll come back in about a minute, and then he'll go, I want to go outside. Stupid cat.